Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 111.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. As always, we're going to kick off with our review of the week. This one comes from Carla2450 and it's entitled Love. Addicted to your podcast and Addicted to your positive and fun podcasts that resonate with me every single week. Thank you for being the reason I now sit with my kids and play or actively get my household jobs done with ease. Folding the washing is finally easy. Haha, I'd much rather listen to your voices than watch trash TV all day. Have been trying to catch up on previous episodes daily. TV hasn't been on in the daylight for weeks. How awesome is that?
That is really cool. Thank you, Carla. I love the idea of helping you smash through household jobs faster because despite the fact that I have actually been listening to podcasts for more than 10 years, it's only in the last year that it occurred to me to listen to them while doing menial chores. Like I just would only ever listen to them when I ran or walked. And I was like, then I discovered doing them when I, made dinner or did the laundry. And I'm like, wow, this is like a complete game changer. And
I constantly listen to podcasts while doing chores, and recently I've started listening to audiobooks, which is just next level.
Yeah, see, I've only ever listened to one audiobook, and I did not love the experience because I do like reading, but I'm wondering if I'm kind of off podcast. No, I'm not off podcasts. I just don't have a binge-worthy podcast at the moment, so maybe I should give audiobooks a try. Anyway.
Yeah, they're really good.
That is a conversation for another week. Carly, it is time for your random thing of this week. Do tell.
So my random thing of the week is just me pretending like I'm a scientist when I'm not one. So I have a friend who's pregnant at the same time as me. So she's 10 days behind me. So we're literally going through all of the milestones together and just texting each other constantly. It's such a blessing being pregnant at the same time as a good
Can
friend
I
of mine.
Can I just say it is awesome. It's so fun. Yes.
It's so good. And we're really, really close friends. So this is unbelievable. So it's been really awesome. So we just keep texting each other every time we do something. So we've both started having our hospital visit. So I'm about a week and a half ahead of her. So I had my 20 week scan last week and sent it through to her. And then she sent me her 20 week scan. My ultrasound told me that my baby was in the right position, which is upside down with her head facing down. And there was a little icon on the scan that showed that she was in the right position. And then she realized after she got home that hers didn't say that. And she was like, oh, I wonder what position my baby's in. The ultrasound person didn't tell me. And then I was looking at my ultrasound versus her ultrasound. And I was like, well, both of our baby's heads are on like the right side of the screen. So if your baby was up the right way, shouldn't your baby's head be on the left side of the screen? And she was like, that's not a thing at all. And I was like, but surely that's how it works. And then I spoke to Ben and I was like, okay, so let's just say that this is the bottom of the uterus. And he's going, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, there is no way that you can look at these two ultrasounds and figure out which way her baby is facing. So stop trying. So that was me just being like, yeah, guys, like this bit here is, so I had no idea.
I was just a professional sonographer having had two scans of your baby. Because, when you're having these scans and they're just pointing stuff out to you, like it's like obvious that this is where this thing is. And you're like, yeah, I can totally see that thing that you're pointing out to me. Okay. I mean, later on, like they start
you're like,
the
you're pretending that you can see it.
Yeah. You're just nodding and smiling going, yeah. I mean, I can see the head because that's obvious, but about everything else is like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm going to take your word for it because you are the professional.
And the professional is not me. So no,
I'm afraid you're not. Cool. So on to, I have to say, guys, just let you know, if I sound a little bit off my tree this week, it is because I am a little bit off my tree this week. I'm a little bit high on migraine drugs, so I feel fine, but if my brain doesn't work properly or if I laugh in inappropriate places, this is a thing I'm most scared of. I'm going to laugh in an inappropriate place and then people are going to send us hate mail. So don't send us hate mail just this week because
Yeah, sorry, guys. Kelly's high.
I can't take responsibility for my reactions. But I will laugh probably much more than normal at Carly's jokes, even though she is funny all the time. She's going to be heaps funnier just this week. Anyway, recommendation on the week. My recommendation is I finally, and I know I'm a slow learner and I'm slow to the party, but I finally gave up on the stupid iPhone podcast app. And I, you know, and then because I noticed some people in the group were talking about, guys, what's the best podcast app because the iPhone one sucks. And some
it sucks.
Totally. And I, because I keep, every time I use it and it sucks, I try to remember the ones that everybody recommends, and I can't remember what everyone's recommended, but it just happened to be in the group this morning and someone said, Pocket Cast, it's an Aussie, it's made by Aussies, and a few other people went, yeah, Pocket Cast is rad. So I downloaded it and it is rad, and thank you to everyone in the group who recommended it. You've changed my phone podcasting life because, yeah, the iPhone one sucks. Carly, your recommendation of the
week. I will take that recommendation because I hate the iPhone one, and I've been using Podbean and that was really good, but then they started adding advertisements like the second you open up the podcast. They're not even related to the podcast. Like before you can listen to your podcast, they play an ad, and I'm like, that's not how this works, guys. Like do it in the podcast. You can't just be – anyway. Really annoying. I will take that. So my recommendation for this week is this little thing called a microplane. I always get confused and call it the aquaplane, which is not what it is. It's a tiny little grater thing that my friend bought me years ago, and I actually use it all the time. It's like a little square, and it's a little square grater, and it's got all these different sides, and I use it instead of a garlic press. So like when I make my coconut chicken soup and it has, you know, like grated ginger and garlic and turmeric, I just use this and you just grate it all, and it's just really good. I've had it for ages. You can chuck it in the dishwasher. I just realized I hadn't recommended it before. It's really good. It's called microplane, not aquaplane.
And it's not a grater. It's a microplane. Is it because it's got smaller holes or something? Is that why it's
tiny,
micro?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly why. So we'll move on to if you were our best friend. This one comes from Jemima. And I'm pretty sure this person requested to be Jemima.
Everybody is requesting specific Jane names now, which is amazing. And also a bit of an indictment on my imagination. Thanks, guys. You don't trust me to give you a good Jane name.
I also think that people are trying to come up with ones that we haven't said before. Yeah, so I think there's a bit of a challenge in it. Yeah. So Jemima says, is it okay to not have goals? I'm 35, a mum of two, a teacher, a wife, and I don't seem to have goals I'm working towards other than being a good mum or teacher or wife. I don't want to move into the admin stream at work. My hobbies aren't goal-oriented. They're reading, going to the beach, being outdoors, travel, yoga, etc. I don't think it's just the stage of life. I don't think I've ever really had goals. I kind of fell into my line of work, did a degree and added a dip ed onto the end, ended up enjoying high school teaching for the most part, fell into the area I'm now working in and love, love, love it. I want to be the best mum, wife, friend, teacher, person I can be, but I can't measure that. Is it okay to not have goals? I read this and I actually think it's brilliant to not have goals. Yes. And I think, Jemima, you sound super satisfied in your life and in your family life. So I would just enjoy it. What an amazing position to be in. I think that dissatisfaction is generally the root of goal setting in general. So I wouldn't stress about not having them, because setting goals is sort of about fixing things most of the time. Mm. And it doesn't seem like you have anything to fix. So if you want to have some goals, if goals excite you and you want something to work towards, I would aim them towards your hobbies. Like for instance, maybe doing 30 days straight of yoga or reading one book a week or something like that, but only if you really enjoy it and you enjoy participating in a goal just for the satisfaction of realizing that goal. But I think your life sounds really sweet. And if you're happy, don't worry about it. Just lead your gorgeous life. It sounds great.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I, as everybody knows, am unapologetically goal-driven achievement junkie, always have been, but
I am. Me too.
Which will surprise nobody. But do you know what? I'm finding the older I get, and this is going to sound like a little bit corny and cliched, but the older I get, the more I realize like the destination is not the reward, the journey is the reward. And I know that sounds like an Instagram meme, but I think it's because I have achieved so many goals that I set for myself and realized that none of them really changed my life in a significant way. Like, I was inherently satisfied at having achieved the goal, but nothing like made my life infinitely better or anything like that. So, and what I've come to realize is it's just actually like the trying is what's fun for me, not getting to the place or not getting to the goal that I've set for myself. Almost half the time it's like I don't get to the place where I've set for myself and I don't even really care because I just had fun having a crack. So yeah, I mean, I guess a good example is the picture book that I did with my son is out in the world.
Which I love. I just got it in the post yesterday.
Yes, I can't wait for baby Smaggle to be like toddler Smaggle. And, you know, so I'm already projecting ahead for you, like baby's not even out yet. And I'm like, come on, toddler Smaggle, enjoy the book. But, you know, so previous Kelly would have been like, oh yeah, let's do a picture book together and then we're going to sell it here and we're going to sell it and we'll do this to promote it and we'll do this to launch it. And then like current Kelly is just like, you know, I had a bit of money set aside for having fun. We invested it in the book. We had heaps of fun creating the book. We love having it out in the world and we love that people are enjoying it and they love the book. And then I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And now I'm kind of like, what's the next fun thing we can do? So it's, yeah, I think what you, Jemima, have achieved is contentment. I don't think it's that you're not goal-driven. I think you've kind of stated like you want to be a good wife and a good mother and a good teacher and a good person, and that is a goal, but even though you can't actually measure it. But the fact is, I feel like you've kind of gotten there and you've done something that a lot of people struggle to do and you are enjoying being there instead of rushing on to the very next thing, which is what I used to do a lot. So, yeah, what's the kind of wrap-up thing? It's just like enjoy the contentment and probably somewhere along the line something will present itself that you want to have a crack at and you'll have a crack at it and you'll have fun having a crack. But right now, yes, it's totally great to not have goals because it means you're enjoying the moment and living in the moment and you're very content and it's amazing and I'm stoked for you. So, yeah.
Oh, also just on that note, it's also okay to not have goals if you're not content. I think if you have, if you're in a period where you're in survival mode, if work is particularly difficult or you're working through relationship issues or you've got family problems or mental health issues, I think state of survival is also a very valid thing that would prevent you from having goals. And I think just powering through and making it through each day is enough for some people. So just if someone is sitting here listening to that thinking, but I'm not content and I don't have goals, you are more than happy. You're great to not have goals as well. So don't stress about that.
That is a good point. I totally agree. So
Our topic of the week is a really good one. We got a reader called Dawn sent us this article and we will send it through to...
We will definitely link to it in the group when this episode comes out because I have made a note.
Kelly will do that.
I have made a note of the URL and made a note to self to link to the article.
I'm terrible at that. I'm always like, we'll link to it in the Facebook group and then Kelly ends up doing it. So the article is all about our fear of going back. So to just give you a bit of a summary about this blog post that we are doing this episode around, it was written by Felicia, who runs a blog called The Craft Sessions, which is actually, it's a really good blog. And I'm pretty sure they run events as well. So that's a very cool thing to check out. It is thecraftsessions.com. She was knitting a sweater and she said, it wasn't until I was almost finished, until I had sewed the sweater shoulders up, knitted the neckband and had sewn on the sleeve that I noticed two mistakes I'd made. The sweater was pretty much done, except that it wasn't. When I realized, I swore a little, I laughed at myself, I took a photo to post to Instagram, and then I quickly pulled it out. What was interesting was that when I posted the photo on Instagram, the overwhelming reaction I got was to leave it. I reckon it was probably easily 9 to 1 to leave the mistake rather than go back and fix it. Everyone was lovely about it, coming up with inventive ways I could live with my mistake or cover it up or creatively embellish it. I wasn't expecting the lovely, caring response, so I almost didn't say that I had already ripped it out. But I haven't been able to stop thinking about the response ever since. So what is our resistance to going backwards and what is the fear behind that? So that's what we're going to talk about today. So Felicia poses a few questions in her post, and we're actually going to work through them, and I'll make sure that she sees this because I really like all of her work. So yeah, so topics for discussion. The first topic is, are we equating failing at something with being a failure? So this is just a quote from Felicia. So when I mention my failures in a public forum, which I do fairly regularly, I always have some kind people tell me that I'm being a bit harsh to myself. This idea is always interesting to me because that isn't how I feel about my failures these days. The word failure doesn't seem harsh to me because it doesn't mean anything more than I screwed something up. It definitely doesn't mean I'm a failure. It simply means there's more to learn. Kelly?
Yeah, so I totally agree with her on this because, yeah, I too always have people telling me I'm far too hard on myself and that I need to ease up a bit. And when I, did a bit of self-reflection for this post for this episode. And when I think about it, I suspect that people who tell me I'm being too hard on myself might be projecting at me a bit, possibly because they may be the kind of personality that when they fail at something, they equate that to they themselves are a failure. And I'm not saying that to be harsh. I'm just saying like some people do make that equation. But for me, I've always been quite good at separating out, like I tried that thing and I failed, as opposed to I tried that thing and oh my God, I'm the worst person in the world and I'm a complete failure. I've always had a very clear line of distinction between those two things. And I think I've said it before on this podcast, like a big driver in my life is certainty and knowing stuff for sure. Like I really hate not knowing. So that always overrides any fear of failure I could possibly have. Like I will always have a crack at something just so I can learn and know something for sure. Interestingly, if I've actually built my identity around something, it's about being that person who's willing to try and fail than not try at all. So I do, like, she kind of posits the question, are we equating failing at something with being a failure? And my take on that is, yes, I see this a lot. It's not a problem for me specifically, but I do find myself talking a lot of people off ledges because they have made, what's the word where two things join together? Connection.
Oh my God. Go home, Kelly. You're drunk.
It wasn't funny, but I had a call the other day with someone in the US about coaching him with his writing and his book writing. And I got off the call and I went into the study where Ant was, and I was just like, oh my God, would you hire someone who has just been completely inarticulate and reaching for words and not being able to get to their words as your editor? Far out. I sure as hell wouldn't. Interestingly, he did. It didn't put him off. I had another one of those calls the other day where I was like, what's that word where you, put two things together? Oh, wow. Anyway, Carly, what's your take on that connection between equating failure and being a failure?
I definitely agree with this, and it really resonated with me because I often get told that I'm too hard on myself, but I think it is because I'm not afraid to acknowledge when things didn't go according to the plan. So if a diet, for example, if a diet didn't work for me, I'll tell everyone, and then I will get lots of things like, you don't need to lose weight, or you're so obsessed with weight loss. And my response is, well, yeah, but that's because I keep trying stuff and it doesn't work. And it's okay to try a diet and have it not work and admit that it didn't work. That doesn't mean that all diets don't work, and it doesn't mean that it was a waste of time. It just meant that I tried a thing and it didn't work. And when I get that kind of aggression of people, because, you know, I tried the ketogenic diet a year ago and it just worked so freaking brilliantly for me. But I tried a different diet every year for 15 years before then, and I wrote about them all, and this is the only one that has sort of actually worked. And I think that kind of negative, you know, you're too hard on yourself, or why don't you just eat the damn cake? That's this response from people who haven't kept on trying, and I think it makes them feel better to try to get me to give up as well. Not that I'm sorry, that was really a terrible
but this is what I mean by projecting. I feel like a lot of the time, and again, it's always with good intentions, like people are trying to make you feel better. They see a failure, they try to make you feel better about your failure without realizing that maybe you're not actually all that bothered by the failure. You're just sharing, like, I tried this thing and it didn't work out, and I'm sharing because it might be helpful to other people to know. And so I do think, you know, if there's a message in this particular under this particular subheading is, and I do it as well, before rushing to kind of make somebody feel better about something, and usually because you're projecting how you would feel in that situation onto them, maybe just stop and have a think and think, oh, is this person actually looking for me to say, oh, better luck next time? Or are they looking for me to say, no way, you don't need to lose weight? Like, yeah, just kind of stop and check yourself and make sure that whatever you're saying to them isn't just you putting your own thoughts and feelings onto that person. Maybe sometimes people do just want to go, oh, well, yeah, good on you for trying. What are you going to try next? You know, so.
Yeah, and also the concept of trying again seems something that people are quite against. If something fails, it's the general consensus is you give up and you move on to something else rather than go back and try and perfect that thing.
Yeah, because that's the next thing that Felicia, I was going to call her Dawn, but Dawn's who sent us the article. Good day today. So Felicia in her article, she asked, do we think that going back is being persnickety? She says, do we think that going back is buying into perfectionism or buying into the idea that we need to do things perfectly to have value? Are we ignoring perfect as the enemy of good to our detriment? Carl?
I think yes, definitely. I think the thought of starting again is so terrifying to so many people that often they just won't start in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I have perfectionist tendencies. You just wrote about perfectionist tendencies just this week.
I did.
And it's hard. It's hard to know where the line is. It's hard to know where the line is between just do the thing or just put the thing out there, or when it's appropriate to hold yourself to a high standard. You know, I know quite often I'll be designing something and I will literally move it back and forth between this 1 millimeter, like I'll move it 1 millimeter to the left and I go, yeah, that's not quite right. And then I'll move it 1 millimeter to the right and I go, no, it's still out of balance. And anybody else looking at what I'm doing is going, what are you doing? But it just, there's certain things that really annoy me and I give myself permission to do them properly. And then there's other things where I'm like, you know what? It's good enough and I get it out there. I do feel it's up to the individual to be able to make the judgment about whether something's worth it or not. And again, this is something where we project onto other people. Like, we see something that's like, it's fine, just get it out there. And we make the person feel bad for, you know, for perfecting their craft or perfecting their art or going back over and over again. And I think, again, we have to be careful about that. But as with everything in life, you know, there are many, many shades of grey to it. So just so that you know, we're not trying to lay down any like prescriptive stuff today. We're more just opening or trying to continue the conversation that Felicia has started. But I think so far what Carly and I are saying is that the things that she's noticing, we've noticed as well. And it's just really interesting, this resistance that we seem to have societally to going back. And the next one is an interesting one that she poses, Carls.
So are we connecting our productivity to our self-worth? Felicia says, why don't we want to go backwards? Why are we worried about spending an extra hour or two on this particular project? If we're going to be making anyway, why not keep making this thing to get it right rather than go on to something else? So full disclosure, I hate going back and doing things over. It is 100% my kryptonite. I spend a lot of time trying to do things right the first time. So I get really pissed off if I have to go back again, but that is, I feel like that I have a justification in that because I'm very good at planning. So in the crochet community and knitting as well, for those of you who aren't knitters or crocheters, there's a thing that you will often do in a project and it's called a test swatch. It's really similar to painting a test patch of paint on a wall to see if you like it. And if you do like it, you paint the whole wall. So if you're knitting a sweater or crocheting something, you'll crochet a test swatch of the stitch that you're about to make to make sure that it is the correct gauge so that when you make the sweater, it's the right size, if that makes sense to people. Yeah. A lot of people really, really want to skip that part. And daily I get people going, do I need to make a test swatch? And my answer is always yes, because it takes 20 minutes and it almost guarantees a positive result. But people are so not into the idea of wasting time. They want to get started on things. So I think a lot of that is people just jumping into things. And then when things go wrong, they just abandon it. Whereas if you are the type of person who plans and tries to make sure that your result is going to be positive, I think you have a better chance of being okay with going back because you can understand what the problem is and go back and fix it. Whereas if you're a real gung-ho, jump straight in person without planning, you have no idea what you did wrong because you didn't think it through. So maybe that's got something to do with it, but that was a bit of a digression. But, that's actually that concept actually helps me with, crocheting because you can follow the pattern to the letter, but there's always something that's going to change your result. And even though I'm a very, very good crocheter, I undo things every single day. And it's made me realize that everything is a process and trying things and redoing things is a part of what makes everything awesome. And also being able to clock what those things are, because as a pattern designer, I have to teach people how to make these things. And if I don't document what I've done the first time, and then when I undo it, I can say, well, here's where I made my mistake. So it's like that's been an amazing training tool for me.
Yeah. It's funny because I knew you were going to say you hate going back and doing things over. because
whatever gave you that idea,
Kelly?
Because
it is unproductive. And
it is, yeah.
And when you are a productive life, Ant never really looks at a map to figure out, like if I'm going to a new place, I'll get on the map, I'll figure out the best way to get there, I'll give myself a little bit of extra time to be late, I'll look at where the parking places are, da 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 da. Like Ant just kind of wings it, and he doesn't mind that he's just taken the wrong exit off the freeway and now it's going to take him 10 minutes to get back onto the freeway. Like that does not bother him. That just drives me insane. And so I apply that very much, that measure twice, cut it once kind of thing, because I hate having to redo something because I was careless. And interestingly, when she said, do we connect our productivity to our self-worth? I was like, oh my God, I think I might do that.
Seriously, was that a shock to you? The second I read that, I was like, absolutely, hands down, definitely. Like if I'm not being productive, what's the point in living? Like,
yeah. Well, I hadn't considered that before and I didn't have enough time for self-reflection to tease that out further this morning. But yeah, I think I do. And then what does that mean? I don't know. Is there something I should change there? I don't know. Maybe I should go with the flow a bit more. Thing is, I don't mind making mistakes. I just hate making mistakes because I was careless, or I hate making mistakes that I should have seen coming. So that's the thing that gets me. But yeah, that was an interesting question. And
That actually reminds me, there's a really good article that I need to share with you guys. I think Lara, whose name I can't remember, from Sharpest Pencil shared from Sharpest Pencil. It was a really good article about mindfulness and how it actually isn't for everyone. It actually got a lot of negative flack from people who are meditators and thought it was really quite negative, but it was sort of about
It was by Ange, our friend Ange, whose yes. name is just completely escaping me at the moment. But yes.
I actually loved it. Yeah. I was like fist pumping. I was like, yes, because, you know, I am a very busy person and I'm not very good at being alone with my thoughts. And sometimes when I write that or say that out loud, I have people say things like, well, that's not very good. And you should really learn to be still. And you should really learn to do this. And you should really do that. And this article was just like, get stuffed. You're not the boss of me. And mindfulness might be good for you, but it doesn't work for me. And I've been thinking that for a very long time, having failed many, many times at meditation. And maybe it's just not my bag. Maybe my quiet time in my head is vacuuming the floor while listening to a podcast.
Yeah, or crocheting.
You know, yeah.
You know, there's so many different ways to achieve that, like to just turn your brain down. And yeah, I agree with Ange. Like I said, look, mindfulness works really, really well for me, but that doesn't mean because it works for me, I thus expect it must work for everybody.
And I'm not saying it doesn't work. I know so many people that have gotten extraordinary benefits out of mindfulness and meditation, which is why I've spent so long trying to get those benefits and I don't get those benefits. So what's the point in keeping on trying?
And that's because like you're not an overthinker like say I am. Like you have your moments.
I'm only a mild overthinker. Yeah. But it's not an all day thing for me.
It's not something that, you know, screws up your life. Like, whereas that's, if I didn't have mindfulness and meditation, I just would never get my brain to shut up. So yeah, you know, I would go mental. So I just think if you're someone like Carly, who's, you know, quite chilled in her brain, like, you know, we all have our things. But, you know, if you don't...
Day to day, I am quite chilled in my brain. I will pay that.
So, and you already have tools for relaxing your mind enough to the level where you need it. So, yeah, I think, again, and I think this is a large part of this, what I took from this article, and maybe I'm projecting, but a large part of what I took from this article of Felicia's is, you know, we just have to be careful about what we project onto other people because it's usually ourselves. And we can learn a lot about what we project onto other people about ourselves. So it's a good way to self-reflect. So her final question or point was, you know, can we think of our time differently? So could we think of the time we use to make the mistake as not wasted, because we do think, oh my God, I just wasted like 3 hours doing that and now I have to go back and start again. She said, you know, think about it instead as time spent invested in our learning. Could we even go so far as to think of the time we spent as time invested in our pleasure? The pleasure we had in that moment simply being with our knitting, not necessarily achieving anything, but simply knitting. And I think that's such a lovely idea. And I have to say, I do feel like I've kind of I've gotten to this place in my life where I'm still a bit of I identify as a productive person and I need to be productive. I have spent kind of the last 6 or 7 years de-overwhelming my life and creating space to kind of just be or to move slowly. So I've kind of, I call it deliberate inefficiency. And I have created these pockets of space in my day where I can be against type, where I can be deliberately inefficient. And what all these pockets of space mean is if I make a mistake or I have to go back and do something, like previously that would have unraveled me. I would have been so angry at myself at wasting time or at, you know, being inefficient, like I have a tightly scheduled day and now I've just screwed up my whole tightly scheduled day. Now, because my days aren't so tightly scheduled, that when I make a mistake, I like, you know, sigh and, you know, Ant says I sigh a lot. It's my thing. You know, I sigh and I get a bit frustrated, but it just does not ruin my whole life the way that it used to. And it's just a really nice place to be if you can create enough space in your life where mistakes don't unravel your whole day. So that's my like little summary, Carly.
Can someone please remind me, like, when the podcast comes out to share the Crochet Manifesto with the group. So the Crochets are what I call my members of Crochet Coach, and I wrote this manifesto for them, particularly aimed at new members, because often they get really frustrated when they don't pick it up straight away or it doesn't look perfect. And I have to train most of them to be okay with the learning process. Mm-hmm. I had to train myself into that as well. And it's such an important lesson to learn. And there's lots of positive statements in there about, you know, if we make a mistake, it's all about the process and, you know, things not being perfect the first time around. There's also a sentence in there about embracing imperfection, but also embracing perfection if that happens to be your bag. So yep. I have noticed that there are, it's actually just a really excellent study in behavior having my crochets, because some people are so focused on making sure that every single stitch goes in the correct spot, and other people are like, oh, look, if it looks okay, I don't care. And you know, I think that there's, and you know what, at the end of the day, they've both made a gorgeous sweater.
Yeah.
So,
and they've both had fun doing it. As long as they're having fun doing it, whatever their method and whatever the outcome is, who cares? It's as long as you've had fun in the doing and the making. Yeah, cool. All right. I have just made note to self, share article link, share Crochet Manifesto when we share this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to everybody else's discussion around this, because that's always my favorite part of our episodes, when everyone else chimes in with their thoughts.
Definitely. Cool. Okay, so that is the topic for the day. We are going to shuffle on now to our final two segments, which is Kicked Ass and Kicked Our Ass. So, Carl, what did you kick ass at this week?
So the thing, well, I didn't really kick ass at this thing, but this is the thing that made me happy this week. So we got to buy the new EasyYo yogurt maker, and I'm really, really stoked, because we had this big old clunky gray one, which, like, we've had it for a decade and we use it every week. And they brought out this snazzy, cute little red one that's just adorable. And I was like, oh, I can't justify buying that, because our old one is working
so well.
Works. And so it still works. I bet, and I would be walking around the supermarket, and it costs something like $15, but I just refused to buy it because the other one still worked. Like, I just couldn't get rid of it. And so we'd walk past it, we just kind of stroke the box, and we'd be like, one day, my pretty, one day you will be ours. So we got to buy a new one this week, and for Kicked Our Ass, you'll just have to wait and find out why we got to buy the new one.
Oh, so now you've just set me up. I can't talk about my kicked ass. anyway. So my kicked ass is that a post, that like a blog post that I've been working on with a friend for like 5 months. If this thing has been through, so this post is kind of to test out an idea that we want to hopefully turn into a book, but we want to see if the idea has resonance first before spending all that time writing a book and finding out no one cares. So anyway, we started talking about it in like January, and then, you know, I kind of, you know, we put together the first draft of the post in, I don't know, March, and it's gone through like I said, 3 complete rewrites, and, you know, 8 complete, you know, 8 drafts. And, you know, it's got to the point where I was like, I was so nervous, because I'm like, I have no idea if this is going to resonate, because I have lost all perspective on this post. A shout out to Paul Cunningham, who is a member of the Straight and Curly group, because in the end I had to send it to him and said, I just need a completely fresh set of eyes on this, who kind of is in this space, just to tell me if it's any good, because I have no idea anymore. And anyway, he gave some really great feedback about where it was going wrong, made it better. It went out into the world last weekend, and yes, it resonated very widely with the intended audience. So yes, phew, kicked ass, so stoked. Yeah, anyone who ever wants to know about just how iterative the writing process can be, let me know, and I'll show you the first draft of this post and the final one, and you'll get to see just like how, like, it was, yeah, they are a universe apart. So, okay, Carly, kicked our ass. This is amazing.
So the reason why we got to buy this snazzy new EasyYo yogurt maker is because Ben broke our old one because he accidentally made a bomb with it. So he texted me a photo of the EasyYo just smashed into a million pieces like all over the kitchen. And this thing is bulletproof. Like you can throw it across a room and it won't break. Believe me, I tried because I really wanted this new one. So what happened was he's gone into full dad mode. So he basically just spends all weekends just like fixing things and messing around and like putting up shelves and stuff. So this is his life now. And he found this stuff called Plasti Dip, which is kind of like it's a spray paint that you can coat things and it's kind of like a plastic coating. And so he had to warm up the can of this spray paint. And they suggested running it under hot water. And he was like, no, what I'm going to do is fill the EZO with boiling water and put the can inside it to heat it up, which actually isn't a terrible idea in itself. But then he loosely placed the lid on top and then it formed a vacuum seal.
Oh, my God.
Inside the EZO and bits of plastic flew all over the kitchen and the can of spray paint basically turned into a round ball because it expanded so much. So, yeah, kicked our ass is Ben accidentally making bombs in our kitchen while I'm pregnant with his child. Really not my favorite thing that happened this week, but I did get the new EZO out of it. So, you know, silver linings, guys, silver linings.
Wow, Ben. Ben, you're so sensible. Like, what were you thinking?
He really is so sensible. In his defense, like, it was the putting the lid on loosely that was the, he didn't screw it on. He didn't realize it was going to make a seal. So that was like, it's not the best thing that's ever happened, but I wouldn't have predicted that happening. And he's pretty good at predicting things, but I was like, yeah, can we not make bombs, please, in the kitchen?
Thanks. Okay. Well, yeah, what kicked my ass? It wasn't a bomb in my kitchen. It's just my monthly migraine that I'm getting now with my monthly period. And it's
is it related to your period?
It just seems to be, and it's just a little bit annoying, and it's a bit of a two-day thing, and just quietly, hormones suck once you turn 40. Yeah, anyway.
It's just about time to wrap up. Don't forget we do have a Patreon page, which is live and kicking. We've had quite a few pledges in the last few weeks, which has been excellent. I see them come through and it just delights me. So thank you so much for those of you that are contributing to our Patreon. We do have a goal to reach $500 per month of pledges. And I think we're just over halfway there now. So thank you so much. If you love listening to the show and you want to support it and keep us in your ears, visit patreon.com/straightandcurly.
And finally, as always, do jump into the Facebook group and share your thoughts about this week's show. I will share the article in there and kind of share the questions that Felicia poses. And I really look forward to, extending the discussion beyond the podcast with you guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.